Hey, we're here. We're glad you're here, too. It's WGN. I am sitting in the Allstate Showcase studio, as I always do. Normally, when I do it, I turn on the microphone. Sometimes, not so much. Sometimes, I like to just do the show for myself. Because, really, no, I don't even listen to it. All right, we're glad you're here, though. I'm very happy. We have a big show planned. 312-981-7200 is the number. That's the phone and the text. And when you call in, you'll be talking to Cody. I'm here this week, but don't get used to it, Goff. He is the executive producer, I think, from Rockford, Illinois. He's got a very busy social schedule. You can also keep in touch with us via social media, Facebook and Twitter. It's Brian Noonan Show. So go on there and get things going. Of course, at 8 o'clock, Karen Conti will be here. She'll be answering your legal questions. We were not here last Sunday, so I'm sure you have plenty of legal problems, especially with a long holiday weekend last week. So we'll talk to Karen after 8 o'clock. It's after 6:30, after the news with Roger, we will check in with our man across the pond. Fred Weintraub will join us to tell us a little bit about what's going on over in the UK now. There's elections coming up in Britain this week. Will those still be going on? The latest with the terrorist attacks. Fred is a royal watcher, and he's our man, as I said, across the pond. We will also talk to one of the board members of the Irish American Hall of Fame, which is having their big induction ceremony next week. So we'll talk to them after 7:30. And we have a social media topic that I think anybody who uses Twitter will be interested in. I know Cody will find this very interesting. I found it very interesting because if you're on Twitter, it affects us all. We've all had an instant to wonder about why this one feature does not exist on Twitter. So we'll get to all of that and so much more. Oh, my goodness. We are last week we were not here on Sunday because it was the Memorial Day weekend. But I was not here because I was going to see Neil Diamond. And Cody was not here because he was in Minnesota. Roger was here because he's Roger and he works tirelessly. And that's we're very proud of you, Roger, for staying here when we are not. Because
thank you, sir.
Someone has to stay here and represent the program even when the program is not on.
Definitely. And so, I'm very proud to do
it. So you were here. That's very good. Everything go okay?
As far as I know, I hope I did everything justice.
The sound session guys did all right?
The kids did good.
Definitely kids.
Yeah.
Let's not give them too much praise, Robert. Let's pull back a little bit on that.
Right, they did okay.
Don't be overly effusive. I tell you what, that show was phenomenal. I wish it was on all the time. They make Sunday night drive home very, very enjoyable. Shut up.
Yeah, you got nothing to worry about. I love them, but.
Listen, this is what I have to worry about. I am trying to recover from a week in New Orleans.
Yeah.
All right, I want to talk to you. 312-981-7200. I want you to talk about the places you lived in college or the places that you've moved your children in, and you can't believe that they're actually paying rent on some of these places. Because I was originally going down by myself to meet my daughter, and I was going to help her move from the apartment that she lived in this semester to the house/apartment that she'll be in next semester. And I don't know whether to call it a house or an apartment, because no matter what I call it, I'm corrected by her. It's, if you've ever been to New Orleans, they have shotgun style homes. So they're very narrow, and sometimes they're single, sometimes they're double. So she's living in half of a shotgun. One barrel, as it were. And if I had to live there, I would shoot myself. I'm not going to lie to you.
What? Why?
It's, well,
too small?
No, it's a college. It's a college house. So you get what you pay for.
Right.
You're paying
on or off campus?
It's off campus.
Okay.
But
okay.
This one is. She got this one mostly for the location because it is literally one block off campus. Mm. So she couldn't be closer for. You know, walking home after mm-hmm. activities at night, she's not worried about that anymore. Her other place that she was spring semester was farther away from campus. She had to Uber anytime she wanted to go home, mostly because I told her I didn't want her walking
right.
through the neighborhood she was living in. She lived right across the street from a cemetery, which, first of all, that's creepy to me. Creepy. I don't want any ghosts coming out when I'm walking home. Plus, it was about a half mile from campus.
Not so much out there. She was pretty much alone then.
Well, no, she doesn't go to, she goes to school in a city, Roger.
No,
I
know, but you said across the street was a cemetery.
Across the street was a cemetery. Well, and then the other three corners, there were residents.
Oh, okay.
So it was one corner, kitty corner, I guess I should say kitty corner from a cemetery.
Okay.
She was in a busy neighborhood, but it was far away. Anyway, So I go down on Tuesday. Now, so I'm supposed to go down and help her, right?
Right.
Well, as you remember, she landed a internship in Los Angeles, which necessitated her leaving for Los Angeles a few weeks ago, leaving me holding the bag to go down and move everything myself, which, okay, I don't want to be a martyr. Yes, it was going to be a pain, but I was going to get to spend a few days in New Orleans. So I wasn't complaining.
So
I'm
always happy. It was a win-win almost?
Well, it was a, yeah, all right. It's a win for her because her old man's going to go move all her stuff while she's away. She doesn't have to deal with it. Win for me, partial. I'll say 75% win for me because I had free time in New Orleans.
Okay.
But then I have to deal with hauling her garbage.
Yeah.
But I made sure that, because I've moved her before, and you've probably moved your college-age student before, too.
Gosh,
I made sure that she had everything packed and labeled. Because I said, I don't mind doing this, but I'm not going to go in and root around through the dwelling that you now occupy, which I had never seen, to find your stuff. It's got to be out, it's got to be easily identifiable, and then I'll have no problem moving it. Well, long story short, so my wife, once my daughters can't be there, my wife decides she's going to horn in on the action, ruin my...
You couldn't have all that fun by yourself.
Well, you know what? That's probably best. Because in retrospect, me left to my own devices for a week in New Orleans, this show would have been coming to you via cell phone from the parish jail. I would have been in New Orleans Parish or up at Jefferson Parish, and we would have been having a whole different... The entire 3 hours would have been legal questions, my legal questions for Karen. Like, seriously, I only punched one horse. Does that make me a bad guy? What kind of things am I looking for? If I could only consume 38 Sazeracs, but I paid for 40 Sazeracs, and then I threw 2 Sazeracs at some unsuspecting mime... Where does that land me? A lot of trouble, probably. All right. So my wife decides she's going to come in. So Tuesday, I fly down, and I have the whole day to myself, which was a good precursor to, thank goodness my wife was coming in that night. And you may say, why didn't you fly in together? Well, because as I mentioned, she wasn't originally coming down, so she had to take a different flight. I go to get the key to my daughter's old place. And I walk into this, it looks like it was a business at one point. And now it's been converted into an apartment. Well, I had been warned by my daughter that, hey, look, there's a subletter who's in there, and she came in and just threw all her stuff around. Imagine walking into a condemned foreclosed crack house.
Oh, jeez.
Just picture that for a moment.
I'm trying not to, but go
ahead. Do that and then make it 5 times worse.
Oh, no.
I would imagine if the place had been clean, it would have been a nice little apartment because it had high ceilings and the kitchen had been redone and all this. But I don't know if it was the girl who was subletting from one of Molly's former roommates or just that there had been a lot of garbage left around. I wouldn't have.
Or whether there were squatters.
Well, there were no squatters because there were people living in there. I wouldn't have sat on any surface in this place. And I'm not a germaphobe.
Yeah.
I'm not a clean freak. I've stayed in horrible hotels in my time on the road. I've lived in horrible condos on my time on the road. I walked in here and thought, oh my God, it's been ransacked. And not ransacked in the good way.
Right.
Ransacked where, like, they break in and then they poop on your counter.
Yeah.
That kind of ransacking. It was horrifying. So, thankfully...
You know, it is dinner time on a Sunday. Come on.
Well, let's not dwell on that. I wanted there to be no mistake how bad this was. I talked to the roommate of Molly's who was also moving out, who assured me, yeah, this is this girl. And she came in and dropped her stuff everywhere. So I know where Molly's place is. Now I get directions to the new place. So now I'm going, and it's pouring rain.
Oh, jeez.
So I'm told that I have to enter a code on a gate. And then I have to go in and remove the housing from the motor that opens the big gate that covers the driveway.
This is at the new place.
This is at the new place.
Okay.
Now it's pouring rain.
God.
And I don't have an umbrella or a poncho or and I'm not prepared for the weather at all. I'm standing there trying to get this coat in, and I get in the yard, but now I'm looking at this motor, and I can't figure out where the keys are. The keys are somewhere inside this motor, I've been told.
Oh, no.
And now it's pouring. And so I go under a tree, which you always should do in a storm.
Oh, of course.
Or go stand under a tree, because that's bright.
You can't possibly get hurt there.
No. But at this point, you know, I'm angry and miserable, and I'm calling my wife. What's going on? I don't know. This is what the landlord told me. And my daughter is texting. He said it was this. And I'm like, ugh. So I go back in the yard, and I'm infuriated. So I grab the housing for the motor, and I jerk on it. Well, that was what I was supposed to do. The whole plastic cover for the motor comes off.
Yeah.
And there are two little keys sitting down. Like, well, there it is. So now I get in this place, and it's been cleaned, and I'm using air quotes.
Yes.
It's been cleaned, but, man. Again.
Mr. Clean needs to come in there?
Well, yeah, this is going to take a little, and the paint chipping off the walls. But then I'm like, well, you get what you pay for. So it's very reasonable.
Okay.
The location is phenomenal.
All right.
And as my daughter goes, did you love it? And I said,
she's seen it already. She knows what she's getting.
Oh, sure. She picked it out.
Okay.
She went and saw it and talked to her roommate who was overseas, and they FaceTimed, and they, you know, did you love it? I said, well, I don't have to live there. Oh, I knew you were going to hate it. Well, I don't hate it. I said, but I wouldn't. You know,
right?
I probably wouldn't live there. All right, we'll talk a little bit more about that, because I want to find out where you guys live, because I have a feeling Cody lived in some weird, like medieval themed castle or amusement park, like lived at the putt-putt course in the under the dragon or some such. 312-981-7200. Your college housing horror stories. We'll get to more on the other side. It's WGN. Julie wants to jump in. She's in Elgin. Hi, Julie.
Hello.
Hi. How are you?
Hi, I was just going to comment. My son spent last year living in a building that used to be a morgue.
Oh.
Yes. And it was slated for demolition this year. However, we learned that they are renting it again. He couldn't put a shirt on without being on his knees because the ceilings were so low.
Oh, my God.
And the laundry was actually the basement of the morgue. So you can imagine the kinds of things that were in the drain and the floor. It was like a horror show. It was horrible.
Why were the ceilings so low? Was he living in one of the drawers?
I don't even know. They took this morgue and divided it into four things and called those apartments.
Oh, that sounds horrifying.
He loved it.
Did he really? Well, see, again, things you'll put up with in your youth that you definitely would not want to do as a grown adult.
Well, you know, you can only go up from there.
Yes, that's true. If that's your bar, the world is going to be nothing but a success for him. Good luck, Julie.
Well, thank you so much.
Take care. Bye-bye. Yeah, that I wouldn't, no, live in a morgue. Where'd you live, Cody, after the dorms? Do you live anywhere creepy?
I always lived in the dorms.
Did you? So did I. See, that's people that I live because a lot of the guys I hung out with lived in the dorms. I was right basically across the street from the communications building.
Well, so, I was an RA.
Okay.
My junior and senior year, so I was getting free room
getting
and board.
Getting paid.
Yeah.
Getting paid. I just lived there because I was lazy, I guess.
Oh. Were you at Thompson Point?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I just that's where I was. Did you have? I'm guessing back when you went to school, Roger, they had tents. They didn't really have buildings, right?
Yeah, Quonset huts.
Quonset huts, sure. Yeah. Right after the Cold War.
Right. Yeah. Actually, we did have Quonset huts. Some of the offices were in Quonset huts.
Well, some of the ag stuff, there were still a couple Quonset huts on the ag, in the ag department when I was there.
I lived in, I went down during the summer. So I was there summer and they only had the towers open.
Okay.
So I was in Schneider. With a roommate who would sneak up to the roof and throw lightning rods down to the ground that he unscrewed from the top.
Why?
Would
he sell them as scrap?
No, he just threw them down at people when he went up there when he was drunk.
Yeah. I've done a lot of things under the influence. Throwing lightning rods was never one of them.
I had never heard the term Quonset hut.
You don't know what a Quonset hut was?
Well, now I do.
Sure, now you looked it up. Nice Quonset hut. We actually, at going back to Adam Hogue and myself both going to St. Ignatius, we used to have, they used to have a Quonset hut that was the theater, but they had to get rid of it because it was, it had been sprayed with asbestos on the inside.
Yeah.
And so when I was a freshman and, well, all through, we always, the asbestos would kind of rain down on you. It was like it was snowy, like you were performing in a snow globe at all times. Jeez. So I probably have some sort of lingering out problems.
Not healthy at all.
No, probably not. But listen, who am I to complain?
You've got a class action lawsuit.
What did you know?
Find out at 8.
Yes, yeah. Sir. Oh, that's
ask Karen.
Oh, ask Karen. Yeah, she'll bring it up. Oh, mm-hmm. Everybody, whoever was in that theater. oh, I feel... It's like I've got fiberglass in my chest.
You've been coughing a lot lately, I've noticed.
Don't I look peaked?
You do.
I do look peaked. All right, to wrap that up, I got all her stuff moved in.
Yeah.
We actually had to, because it was pouring, we had to get a, I ended up having to rent a van from U-Haul, and then we hired a local college kid because she ended up buying a couch from the place she formerly lived,
uh-huh.
And I can't lift a couch by myself, and my wife, I love her, brilliant woman,
uh-huh.
Can't lift a couch. And she would say the same thing. She was the one who kept saying, listen, it's worth the $40 to hire these kids to come over and haul the dresser, and and I was like, you know what, yeah, I guess it is. This is after I had taken, you know, 3 small SUV loads of stuff to the new place. The new place to which, back to what half a shotgun is?
Yeah.
Her bedroom has no privacy. Her bedroom, you have to walk through to get to the back bedroom and the bathroom.
Yikes.
So she's kind of living in a middle room.
To get through the back bedroom?
It's a shotgun. So there's a door in the back. Picture like a door at 6 o'clock.
Yeah.
Okay, that goes into a little kitchen. You walk through the kitchen into a living room. In the living room, there is a door at 3 o'clock that will take you outside. If you go off the, you know, go over to like 7... and then head up the hallway. It's not a hallway. You go from the living room through a doorway into my daughter's room. Then you go, then there's the bathroom, and then there's a back bedroom. So it's everything's in a straight line. Kitchen, living room, one room, bathroom, bedroom.
And she's got a roommate?
Yes, who has the back bedroom that has a door. Now, there is a door that you can close off from the living room to the back of the house. But I said to her, you know, are you sure you want to do this? Oh, yeah, it's bigger. And it is bigger than the one in the back, but you don't... theoretically, you have no privacy. Anytime somebody has to go to the bathroom, they have to walk through your room.
Wow.
And if the roommate in the back is going to or from or has company or whatever, everything goes through your room. Your room is the hub of the apartment. It's weird, isn't it?
But she could sell like Grand Central Station. She could put a schedule together of when the walkway will be open.
I guess. I don't know. All right, Lynn, we got to do this. Then it's news time. Then we'll talk to Fred Weintraub, who is overseas, and we'll get a little update on what's happening in London. We'll do all of that after this on WGN. London has had another terrorist attack, the third in 3 months. This happened Saturday night in London. You know the details by now. Just a quick refresher. 3 men in a van crashed into people on London Bridge, went into the nearby neighborhood, started stabbing people. At this point, death toll stands at 7. You have at least 48 people were taken to the hospital, and police today making at least 12 arrests. They continue to do their investigation over there. It is another sad day in London, and we always, anytime there's anything that happens in Great Britain or the UK, we like to talk to our good friend Fred Weintraub, TV executive here in Chicago. He is the creator of The Worldly Fellow. He's a royal watcher. And he is splits his time between Chicago, London, and Houston. And yet today we find you, where do we find you, Fred?
Today you find me in the middle of the Alps in Austria in a small town called Walsee, which is about an hour from Salzburg.
Are you looking for the Von Trapps? What's going on over there?
You know what? I go up to the top of the Alps and I start seeing the hills are alive, and I'm hoping somebody will think back to me. So far it hasn't happened.
That would be nice.
But it's a beautiful, while bad things are going on all over the world, if you ever get an opportunity to come to this part of the world. It's really beautiful, and in some ways it looks like a picture postcard of what you would hope and like the world to look like.
And yet we know that one of your homes, London, was under attack again. Now, this is a city that, going all the way back to the wars, Londoners are used to kind of living with the specter of an attack. With the latest now, the third in 3 months, do you think, from your experience, are Londoners starting to panic? Is it getting to be too much?
Well, I think, it's always getting to be too much. I think that, no, they are not panicking. There's the outward presence, and you see that on the news today. You saw it in the news today that the Prime Minister came out and she said that we will not tolerate this, and she outlined some of the actions that will be put into place. But as you said, this is the third time it's happened, and tonight was a huge charity concert in Manchester.
Right.
Because less than 12 days ago, 22 people were killed, many of them children, as they left the pop concert. And so when you get down to brass tactics and you drop your teenagers and youngsters off to a concert and they don't come back alive and some are seriously hurt, you as a parent, you as a human being, you as a UK resident, you have to be scared. You have to be scared. But London is a metropolitan city, so diverse, and this will not shut it down. And this is a particularly sensitive week coming up because they're about to have elections on Thursdays.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that because two of the three big parties said, all right, we're going to suspend our campaigns on Sunday. So they suspended their campaigns. But the Prime Minister, one of the things she's been talking about, and I'm wondering how this is being received in London and throughout the UK, she's saying she's going to do her best, I'm not quoting her directly, but she's saying she wants to get rid of some of these self-segregated neighborhoods and really start to push more investigative tools to try to keep this from happening. When you talk about dissolving the borders of neighborhoods and making sure maybe so many people aren't living with similar people, how is that going over there?
I think it's unrealistic, and I think people know that it's unrealistic. Two of the things that have come out with this attack of last night, are we following the internet from a professional standpoint as closely as we should be? Are the police departments following the internet, and are they taking the signals from radical groups that are out there? And there was even some early information showing that something came out yesterday on the internet that had a white van on it in the internet picture, and maybe that gave these three people the clue that yesterday was the day to attack. Now the politicians are coming out and say these internet providers and the internet companies are worth billions of dollars. They have a right, and they also have an obligation to be helping monitor the situation. So from a professional internet standpoint, yes, there are things that can be done, and she, the Prime Minister at this point, is expecting the internet companies to get more involved. But the other side is the community groups. So you're in these neighborhoods, which can carry terrorist cells, and there are certain neighborhoods, just like there are certain neighborhoods all around the world, that may be high crime neighborhoods, that may be more terrorist neighborhoods. And so when you look at these neighborhoods, politicians are now saying it's partly up to the community, to the street level people, to let us know when there's a problem. There were people on the news tonight saying, I knew one of the people that was killed in the terrorist attack that was one of the alleged terrorists, and they've been talking about 2 years. They've been talking for 2 years about doing this.
Mm-hmm.
And you either make it a point of going to the authorities and saying, I think there's a problem there, or I don't think there's a problem there. some of these people have said they did go to the authorities. And just in any big city, there's bureaucracy.
Sure.
So in some ways, you don't really know exactly what to believe.
Well,
I think what you do know is that the police department, the politicians are in some ways doing the best they can. But the system has to change because you can't keep going back to the constituencies and saying, you know, we'll do better when 22 people are killed, when 7 people are killed. When they went into Borough Market, and I would relate Borough Market in Chicago to like going into Wicker Park at 10 o'clock and running people over a bridge and then knifing them. Mm-hmm. And the interesting thing, and not interesting, but the thing that tells a lot is, 8 police officers went in and they shot off 50 rounds of ammunition to kill the three people that had done the stabbings. And the 3 people had what they thought were suicide.
Right. Those ended up not to be real, but you can imagine as if you're going in to confront these guys and you see those, you're going to do whatever you can do to take them down. 50 shots for 3 suspects seems like a lot.
50 rounds for 3. And so that's a lot more than just 50 shots, which shows how sensitive the police officers feel they need to be and what they thought they needed to do last night to stop what could have been a deadly situation. Because you can imagine if 3 suicide bombs, you know, if they'd blown themselves up,
right,
it would have taken out a lot more, obviously, than 20 than the 7 people.
All right, you brought up the elections on Thursday. What are these attacks, these last 3 attacks, how much of an effect are they going to have on the elections? We know the prime minister is part of the Conservative Party. She's the one talking about regulating the internet and getting rid of, breaking down the barriers of these self-segregated neighborhoods. How are the conservatives being perceived over there, and what about the other 2 parties? What's the political climate like in terms of, you know, these attacks?
Up until last night, the Prime Minister, Theresa May, the Conservative Party, had a really strong lead over her challengers, to the point where she didn't have to call for an election at this point in the year. She did it because she knows that Westminster is not working well together, and as they go into the Brexit-specific negotiations in the fall, that she has to have a stronger hold. Now, with last night's attack, it could change the entire complexion of the election, in part because people care about 3 things. And I think they care about them no matter where you are in the world. You care about your kids' education. You care about how much money you have in your pocket. And you care about your safety. But with the pound falling as low as it's falling, the economy has been the big issue. And with Brexit, the economy has been the big issue. But now, safety is the big issue. And if people feel that they are not safe, that they can't go out on a Saturday night and enjoy a cocktail or a dinner at 10 o'clock in a hip kind of area, which is what Borough Market is, then that may change. That could change what people might say. We won't be able to spend our money, mm-hmm, if we're not alive and if we're not safe to do it. So this clearly gives Jeremy Corbyn, who's the Labour Party, the head of the Labour Party, it clearly gives him an opportunity to step in. Now, today being in the UK, today's Sunday, this was the last Sunday that they could campaign.
Mm-hmm.
In theory, they stopped the campaigning today for all the obvious reasons. But they didn't really stop the campaigning because the prime minister came out and she was very prime minister-like and said what she needed to say.
Right.
And so did Corbyn. He came out and said, my priority at this point is the safety of all the people in the UK. Well, if it were a different Sunday, they may have come out and said, my priority is making sure that people have money in their pockets and that your kids can have a quality education. So I think coming up on Thursday, while the polls right now indicate that Theresa May has a significant lead, if I were to speculate for you, I would speculate and tell you that she will win, but I think it will be closer than what it would have been if this incident hadn't happened.
Do the Royals get involved or make any sort of statements when something like this happens? I mean, we hear from the Prime Minister, we hear from government officials, which we should. We've heard from the Mayor of London, obviously, because the President of the United States had to answer his statements, which, for all intents and purposes, seem to be just trying to calm the citizenry down. But do the Royals get involved? Do they make statements?
The answer is yes, and the way so because this only happened on Saturday, they would not make a statement that quickly. But what you saw with the Manchester tragedy is the day after the Manchester tragedy, Queen Elizabeth went to Manchester and she visited with people with her, you know, people who got hurt in the hospital. You also know that at some point last week, I think Prince William also went to Manchester. So they, in their own kind of private way, without a ton of cameras, maybe one camera is in there, they go to talk to the people that, the paramedics, the police officers, but more importantly, the families of the victims. And I would expect that based on how they've operated in the past, they will do that, but they will do it in a very non-political like way. They're really not, my opinion is, they're not looking for attention. They're looking to support the country, where the politicians are looking to support the country, but they're also looking for attention because we're in the middle of a political season in the UK. So they will do it in a different way, but do not be surprised by the end of the week if you've heard that Prince of Fan or, you know, Prince William and the Queen have made their way to the hospitals in London to talk to the victims.
All right, we got to clarify something, Fred. People are texting in about how many shots. I said shots and you said 50 rounds. People are saying a round is a shot. 50 shots is 50 rounds. So 50 rounds were fired at these three suspects.
50
rounds.
50 rounds were fired.
So 50 rounds. So people are, the text line exploded. Before I let you go, we know that the terrorism level was raised from severe to critical the other day after Manchester. There were some travel warnings coming out today for tourists who are going to London. Any word on what this, and this is a very minor thing, obviously, the day after a tragic event, but I'm sure, you know, the mayor and everybody, all the leaders over there are starting to wonder, how is this going to affect people coming to London? As you mentioned, one of the parties is saying, listen, if people don't feel safe, they're not going to come here. They don't want to live here if people don't feel safe. People don't want to visit somewhere when they don't feel safe as well.
Too early to tell how it's going to affect tourism going into the summer season. But if you look at France as any example, tourism in France in 2016 was down about, I think, 7%. Mm-hmm. And for the attendance at the Louvre, which is the museum that you go to when you're in Paris, over the last 2 years, it's been down 21%. So you could expect that tourism will, they won't say this, obviously, but you can expect that they'll take a hit. Does that mean that people will feel that it's unsafe to travel to London? I think that more information needs to come out, particularly on this terrorist attack, even though reports are saying that it's ISIS-related. It's too early to tell any of those things. So I think you just got to wait and see. But indications are from other parts of the world that when you have major terrorism instances, like three in a three-month period of time, that it can't be good for a $20 billion tourism industry, which London has.
Not at all. Well, Fred, I always appreciate the time and the insight. People can follow you on Facebook at The Worldly Fellow. And when are you coming back to Chicago? When are you going to be back on U.S. soil? Or are you going to stay in Austria?
No, I'm going to be back on U.S. soil in about 3 weeks.
All right. Well, we'll look forward to seeing you when you get back. Always a pleasure. Thanks for your time again.
Talk to you soon, Brian.
Take care, Fred. Fred Weintraub, he is The Worldly Fellow. You can follow him on Facebook. You see him on WCIU all the time. You hear him here on WGN. He is a Royal Watcher and our man across the pond. All right, let's do this. Then there's more. It's WGN. We got a couple things real quick before we go to the news. I saw one of the most bizarre things the other night while we were in New Orleans, and it wasn't the fact that I stopped drinking beer, but it was close to that. So Friday night, we got all the moving done by Thursday. So we had Thursday and Friday to do whatever we wanted, and most of yesterday to do whatever we wanted in New Orleans, and it's always fun. So we had decided that Friday night, after we spent a wonderful, I don't have time, we need to do a travel podcast, Cody, another podcast, spent the afternoon in Algiers Point, which is the second oldest neighborhood in New Orleans. It's just across the river from downtown New Orleans. Beautiful neighborhood. We had a great time. So we decided we were going to go out to dinner, and then we were going to go somewhere to hear music. And we ended up going to the Rockin' Bowl, which, if you've ever been to New Orleans, maybe you've heard of it. Anyway, it's a fun place. Very lucky happenstance. We didn't know what band was going to be there. I just knew the music started at 9:30. Turns out it's an 80s cover band. So they open with Van Halen, and I know from there it's just going to be a wonderful night. So they're playing all these songs. Here's the weird thing. It wasn't that I was watching a cover band in New Orleans, but it was that halfway through the first set, all of a sudden hula hoops appeared. People brought, and it was all people like, the audience was predominantly people from their late 30s to 50s. And all of a sudden, all of these women were doing the hula hoop at a bar. Like one woman who looked like Amy Guth in about 15 years was on the table doing the hula hoop. Have you ever been to a bar where hula hooping just broke out?
Not a bar.
No, it was
they're big
the weirdest
EDM
thing.
Shows.
Are they really?
They're huge. It's a thing. I don't know if it's always girls that are rolling or not, but anytime I go to the North Coast Music Festival,
yeah,
there'll always be a handful of girls that bring a hula hoop and they're doing tricks and weird things with them.
Yeah, these were, I don't know where they came from. They must have been either behind the bar or somewhere.
Were they just regular hula hooping?
Yeah.
Or were they doing crazy tricks?
No, they were just hula hooping. But one woman who I'm guessing had to be about my age, very, very attractive woman. She's hula hooping and she's moving around. She's getting it going real slow. Then she'd get it going real fast. And her hips are just spinning around. And my wife and I are both just looking, going, what did we wander into? We're listening to, you know, a band do In Excess. And these women are all hula hooping. And then some drunk dudes tried to hula hoop. And there were a couple generational groups, like parents and their 21 or 22-year-old kids, and they were trying to hula hoop. So I don't know what was going on with the hula hoops.
I think that's called cougar hooping.
What? Is that a thing?
No, I just made it up.
Because it makes sense, that moniker.
I think we need to copyright it.
Yes, hashtag it.
Trademark it.
I've got a picture. Maybe I'll post the picture, and then we'll hashtag it cougar hooping, and then it'll go viral.
Oh, man.
And then I'll probably get sued by the woman who's hula hooping in the picture, because that's how it goes.
Send it to me. I'll crop out her head.
Okay, yeah. The problem is she was hula hooping, so you can't really see the hula hoop, you know? Because the hula hoop was moving.
So fast.
Plus, it was kind of dark, and she was standing on a table right above me. It was almost like I was at a go-go club, because she climbed up on this picnic table, and she just started going. And at one point, like her husband or boyfriend and other people were trying to hula hoop, and then she took the hula hoop kind of off by herself and just hula hooped by herself. And, you know, nobody watched. I paid a little attention. My wife looked over occasionally. And then, you know, somebody else would come. Then they laid the hula hoop down, and somebody came and grabbed it and took it. Somebody else was hula hooping. Then there was a dude who was just dancing all by himself all night, even before the band started, just to the music they were playing.
Was that the one in your video?
Yes, that was the one in the video.
He was kind of cool. He was laid back.
I caught him during, I made the mistake of catching him during a laid back dance.
Oh, okay.
I called him the Hat. And the Hat was out of his mind. At one point, the Hat was spinning around like a dervish and dancing, dancing, dancing. And then a young woman came over to kind of dance with him. She had some connection with the band, I think, but she had to be early 20s. And she came over, and you could tell it threw the Hat off. He did not want to dance with another human being. He wanted to, because she was trying to engage him in a dance, and he wanted nothing to do with it.
He was solo dancing.
He was solo dancing. He was Billy Idol dancing with himself.
Okay.
He definitely had his own deal happening.
There is a dive bar in Chicago that I went to, and there was a guy doing that, but he was in his probably 80s.
Okay.
Dancing by himself to country music, and now it's going to drive me crazy because I loved that bar, but I haven't been back since.
All right, we have to find that bar.
I got to find it, but anyway.
And that guy.
He was phenomenal because every time a girl would get up and start dancing, he'd take one of her hands, and he danced with every girl in that bar. He had it going on.
Yeah, but he was 80. He could get away with that.
Right. This guy, the hat didn't want anything to do with anybody else. The hat must dance alone. All right, let's do this. Then there's more. It's WGN. I don't have control to turn this down, Cody. When you run them, you have to turn them down.
I really just wanted.
I know you just want
hard
rock. We like to rock. I like to keep a little hard rock underneath. It gives an edge to the program.
Well, I turned it down, so now I don't know what you're doing.
Now we're just cranking up the jams.
Let's just talk with a bed under the whole show.
Yeah, because that way it sounds like, we could be talking about puppies or kittens, and all of a sudden we got this death metal underneath us.
It's such a juxtaposition between his musical selections and his topic choices. I don't understand what kind of program he's running, and why does he keep saying program instead of program? I don't understand. He's been doing it all night. Is it some sort of affectation that he's somehow picked up when he was in Louisiana? And why do I say Louisiana and not Louisiana? So many people have so many affectations. It's fantastic.
All right. There, the music finally ran out. Well, that was Megadeth. Nice. All right. Fantastic. Karen will be here. She's answering your legal questions. When? After 8 o'clock. You know how this works. Right? It works the same way every week. We're not reinventing the wheel here. Come in. Talk. Boom, boom, boom.
You could say, though, that she is a rock star, and that's why you're playing the rock music.
Are you in? Well, one, she's not coming in for an hour. Two,
yeah,
are you in legal
okay.
trouble that you have to suck up to Karen? Three,
not that
I know
don't, of.
The only people I refer to as rock stars are actually musicians who are, in fact, rock stars. Like the quartet that is in Soldier Field tonight.
Yeah.
U2 is there again tonight. Oh, Cody looks surprised. How do you know there's a concert? Because I know things.
I didn't know they were there.
They were there last night and tonight.
I didn't know they were a quartet.
Well, there's four of them.
I didn't know that.
See?
I know there's Bono and other people.
Bono, The Edge, Larry Mullen, and who's the fourth guy?
Flea?
Flea is in Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Well, I got
Easy
confused.
Gramps.
It's easy. For me, it's easy to get confused.
I understand. why am I blanking on the fourth member of U2? There's only four of them. I should be able to remember them.
Go through them again.
Adam Clayton.
Oh,
there
okay.
it is, Adam Clayton. Right. And I beat the texters. So that's.
I was about to say, if we weren't on a 20-second delay or whatever.
I beat the texters.
But you know we're still going to get him.
Oh, sure.
Because we're on the delay.
It takes a while. That's fine.
Yeah.
But thank you. We've got him. My goodness. So this, I saw this article today, this story, it struck very close to home. And I knew Cody would enjoy it, and I'm wondering if. How the rest of you feel about this. Anybody who uses Twitter, I'm sure, has made a mistake on Twitter. Whether it's a spelling mistake or something that you would like to change, and you think to yourself, how come I can't edit my tweets? How come if I go on Facebook, I can edit my tweets? But Twitter, I can't edit my tweets. And that's always been the way with Twitter. And a lot of people are hypothesizing perhaps the president would have liked that if he could edit his tweets, especially after Covfefe the other day. I know Cody made a lot of hay out of Covfefe. I don't know what Covfefe meant. Nobody knows. According to the administration, a few select people know what that means. But anyway, that's not the point. The point is there was a column, an editorial, wondering why we can't edit our tweets, if it's a good idea to allow editing of tweets, and if it's something that should be discussed, because they laid out a number of different things. One, which I agree with. There's a permanency to Twitter. So if you tweet something, unless you delete it, it's there. You can't go back and change it to protect some, if you've changed your mind. And again, I'm only using the president as an example because this seems to be one of his chosen ways of connecting with the people. The president tweets a lot. That's a fact. The president tweeted a lot before he was the president. Some of his past tweets are coming back to haunt him because they are in direct conflict with his current tweets, right? So we've all seen that. So would you want in a case like that, because now the president cannot delete his tweets under his current handle because they're part of the presidential record. So he can't go in and delete the Covfefe tweet. He can't go in and delete the tweet to the mayor of London right now. Those are presidential record. He can't do it. But would you want the president or anybody else being able to go back and delete their tweets or edit their tweets. Now, on Facebook, you know you edit things, and it says edited, so people will know. So one of the arguments was, listen, we need to keep Twitter. And unless you delete it, you can't go back and change some of the wording because you can't change things to fit your current mood from years ago. Then there was another school of thought that said, well, maybe Twitter should change now. From here on out, you can't go in and you can edit, but you can't go back. You know, nothing's grandfathered in. So the tweets you tweeted last year can't be edited, but the tweet you tweet tomorrow, that could be edited. Because we've all made these mistakes. I've made spelling mistakes on Twitter and just went, oh, man, and I don't want to leave the... So I end up deleting the tweet. It's not that I've tweeted something that I thought maybe I shouldn't say or that I have to apologize for. It's just because I'm in a hurry to tweet with my giant thumbs and my spelling is bad. Or I leave a word out. And you don't want that record out there. So you've kind of, you delete it. And then usually I'll just do a new tweet with what I had said, but I'll be more careful. Where do you, as a social media expert, Cody, where do you fall on this?
Well, you have to look at it from the business side of things, too. So I've worked in social media marketing for a while.
A long time.
And what's really frustrating about Twitter and LinkedIn is that you can't edit posts once they're up. But the thing is that if you make a post and you're a business and you're a brand and maybe you've paid to promote it, maybe you haven't, but you immediately have access to analytics. So if I make a Facebook post, I can say, all right, well, 20,000 people saw this Facebook post, 200 people clicked on it. That's good for me to know as a marketer because I can go to my boss and say, hey, I posted today, and it netted us this amount of attention, this amount of engagement, and things like that.
Right.
Well, if I do this on LinkedIn and suddenly realize that a comma is misplaced or one word is misspelled or someone's name is misspelled, I can't edit that.
Right.
So if I delete that post, I lose all those analytics.
All that in.
And suddenly, those 300 people that came to my website, I can't track where they came from. So you're losing data. It's not just about changing your mind about saying something. It's you're deleting data when it comes to your analytics. So the Twitter perspective is the same thing. And I literally just misspelled a word in a tweet because of autocorrect on my phone. Now, to me, that doesn't matter. Like, I don't care that I misspelled it. I said laying and...
Were you tweeting under the show account? Is that why it doesn't matter?
It was under my account, actually. But it doesn't matter because I just don't. I have a pretty low bar for myself.
Okay.
So to me, that doesn't matter. But if it were a brand and I've got X amount of clicks or whatever, that can affect that. And also on the back end of social media, there's a lot of algorithms in place on Facebook and LinkedIn and some other networks that kind of prioritize posts that see a lot of engagement. So let's say I post something on LinkedIn that lots of people are clicking on and everyone that sees it really likes it, it's really hot, but it has an error in it. Then I'm like, well, I can delete it so no one catches this minor error, but then I'm losing all of those eyeballs on my brand and all those eyeballs and all those maybe clicks from my website. So there's a whole e-commerce element to it, and Twitter is struggling to make money as a company. They've always struggled to make money.
Yes.
So to brands, this is just a bad thing. This is just brands look at it and they're like, oh, well, if I mess up, I have to delete it. That sucks.
Yeah, it doesn't make
any
sense.
That sucks for business. So it's harder for Twitter to sell it. So me personally, I think a lot of people will focus on what you're talking about, the whole, you know, maybe people change their mind, you know, individual level. Mm-hmm. But you got to look at it as a brand level. And what is McDonald's putting their money into Twitter for?
Well, and the thing, you know, we've seen many stories about brands who tweet out something not good for their brand. Something insensitive, something wrong, you know, it's perceived badly by the public. Then they just delete them. But we know they're never really gone. Because the minute they're there, if somebody sees it, they're taking a screenshot. That tweet will live on. Despite the fact that, you know, whatever company has tweeted something, and we've seen it during Super Bowl, we see it all the time with brands making mistakes on social media. So they're always there, but again, from a PR standpoint, it's good for them because they maybe can get it out of the way quicker. But from a marketing standpoint, a business standpoint, not so good.
Yeah, I mean, they can already delete a tweet, right?
Sure.
So adding the ability to edit a tweet it's not like, oh, well, all of a sudden you're letting people rewrite history. No, they're already allowed to delete it.
Right.
Them being given the opportunity to edit it isn't giving them any extra power. All it does is allow them to edit it. People will still screenshot that original tweet.
Sure.
If it's something malicious or something in really poor taste, that's going to exist anyway, especially if they let you, if they require you to display the edit history as Facebook does,
yes,
which I think is pretty intelligent of them to do. So I don't think it'll make any difference. I just think that Twitter needs to do it as a business tool for brands to be able to correct in case they make a minor typo.
Well, they've been resisting it for a long time. There's 328 million users on Twitter right now. I would say, what percentage of that? I'm going to say 95% bots. Would that be close? No, I'm not. Not that high.
It's high.
I've actually been reading Twitter more in the last couple months. I would tweet occasionally, but now I'm reading it more and, you know, linking to articles and seeing things, and, you know, it's all right. But they're trying to decide how many edits would Twitter allow. Would it be one solution was, hey, maybe we'll just let verified accounts edit, but then the non-verified accounts are. They had one example in the article that an unverified Twitter user was the person who tweeted about hearing the helicopters going overhead. Well, that was the mission that killed Osama bin Laden. He tweeted that out because, as we know, that's how instantaneously news can get out there, and misinformation as well. But news and reports, or, you know, coverage of protests, coverage of those kind of things, that's getting out instantaneously. So, all right. Well, you know, we don't want that guy changing his story either. He's a good source. He's a good Twitter user. Why should he not be able to edit? But, you know, me, because I'm verified, why should I be able to edit and him not?
Yeah, that's dumb.
So that idea was like, nah. They're brainstorming. They're spitballing, trying to figure out if this is a good idea overall. And I don't know. I tell you, I would have liked to have been able to go back in and just change the spelling of a couple words. But we will see. Do you foresee that happening?
I think it'd be smart. It's a smart business move. I think it just gives users a little more power. I don't see any drawbacks.
What do you think about this? Was one other suggestion that maybe you could edit on a, but you have to apply for an edit. You have to, like, go to the judge and go, hey, I screwed up. And so they'd have a board of people who would, can you imagine how horrible a job that would be, seeing all these requests to being able to edit your tweet. Hey, I misspelled there. I used the wrong one in haste. Oh, my God. Okay, fine. You can edit. Yeah, I called a group of people a disparaging name. No, you can't edit that one. Sorry. So that was another way they were trying to figure it out. But
that does not make any sense.
I just thought with 328 million users, there's a number of us who use it. It's something that I know we've all thought about. So it'll be something that hopefully they continue to evolve and have that conversation and decide down the road what's best for the users, what's best for the company, and then what's best for all the businesses that use Twitter. Because it's an integrated part of a lot of social media strategies for companies, right? It's not just, you know, now they use everything.
Yeah.
Facebook, Instagram, Twitter.
And you can edit an Instagram post, right?
I don't. Can you?
I think you can. LinkedIn,
I can't remember.
LinkedIn just introduced the ability to edit LinkedIn posts.
I have to go back and look, because sometimes I'll do the same thing. If I see that I've misspelled something, I'll just delete it.
You know, I know that if I do a photo to Instagram from, like, through my camera, it just goes to Instagram, but I like to link it to my Twitter feed, which is
sure.
linked to Facebook. And I
look at how Roger. Look how integrated Roger is.
Very
multi-platform.
Integrated.
Well, I
for a guy who thought Flea was in YouTube.
For someone who actually knew there was a
yeah,
Flea.
Yeah, that's true.
Thank you.
All right, credit where credit is due. You did know that there was a musician named Flea.
Yeah.
What does he play?
Guitar.
Bass. Close enough.
All right. Well, it's the thing with the strings that they have around their neck, and they
pick
that.
I gave it to you.
Thank you. God bless.
You win.
I didn't know that. You're the pro here, Brian.
You didn't know the Flea played bass?
No.
Oh.
Now, is he the one that...
Mama played bass. Daddy said played fiddle.
The only reason I even knew Flea existed...
Mama sang bass. Papa sang bass. Mama played fiddle.
Yeah.
I don't know what Mama did.
Doesn't Flea have the big, tall hat?
No, that's Slash from Guns N' Roses.
Okay, I'm getting... I got my two bands a little mixed up. All right, so I'm going back to Guns N' Roses. That's three bands that I shouldn't know about. But yeah,
well.
I can go back into Instagram
okay.
and click on the little dots over my post,
uh-huh.
and I can select share. Now, I never go into edit, and so I can't remember if when I do that, I can... edit.
You can edit an Instagram. I just checked. You can edit an Instagram post,
okay.
but like if you post on Instagram and it automatically goes to Facebook and Twitter, if you edit it on Instagram, that doesn't edit it on
right.
Facebook
right.
and Twitter. So
and sometimes I'll go back to Facebook since you can add more on there.
Sure.
And I'll add more for the people following me just on Facebook.
Now, when you do that, are you drinking coffee?
Café.
Is that
he drinks some café?
I'm always drinking café.
Is
café-fé.
That the pronunciation?
I don't know. It's a made-up word. Café. Café.
Did you see?
No, that's Nescafe.
Oh, okay.
It's Nescafe. Or oil of ole.
I'm getting my bands mixed up. I'm getting my café.
You know who likes a nice cup of café? Slash and Flea when they're sitting around at a coffee clutch.
Did you see Merriam-Webster's dictionary tweeted about café?
Yeah.
Tweeted something like basically checks Twitter, checks analytics to see what people are searching for, goes back to bed. The dictionary's been killing it.
The dictionary rules
on
There's
Twitter.
So many people. My daughter laughed at me when I told her to take a dictionary to college. I said, "You want to write? You got to have a dictionary." I have a dictionary. I have dictionaries all over my house, and yet I could not, and I can't come up with the word I was searching for when I was talking to Fred. I'm drawing a blank. I'm gonna figure it out during the break.
We can talk about it.
What were you talking about? What were you trying to?
I was trying to find when you're saying something that someone said, but you're not quoting them. You're
paraphrasing. Jeez.
I know that word. I don't know today.
It
I don't know.
Just didn't. Yeah.
I'm gonna blame a week in New Orleans. My synapses are still kind of running. In a lot
you
of liquid.
You just got back into town yesterday.
Last night. Oh my goodness! Yeah, I can't be expected to be 100% today. All cylinders firing. What are you nuts?
I don't know how hard you can come down on Roger for not knowing Flea when he at least knew the word.
He knew
paraphrase.
Well, he's a newsman. He makes his living writing the news.
I've been a 20-year teacher. I used it all the time.
I No useless things like Flea plays bass, mm-hmm. and the guy in the top hat is Slash,
mm-hmm.
and yet paraphrase, and you've got to admit, I have a pretty good vocabulary.
Great vocabulary.
But, and yet, I went for that word, mm-hmm. I reached into the file, and the file was empty. I'm like, no, I know it's in there. And I'm rummaging through it like a dog digging a hole in the backyard. I'm like, where's the word? I could not find the word.
Plus, when you're in the classroom, you're teaching very young students, right?
Right. I don't paraphrase with the kindergarten
kids. Yeah, I was teaching high school those 20 years, so I could use that word.
I can't.
And then they'd stare at me like kindergarten kids.
I ain't got no words. I ain't got no big, pretty words. Nothing. We will be talking to our friends from the Irish American Heritage Center and the Irish American Hall of Fame after the 7:30 news. Here's this is big news, very big news if you are, if you're part of the tourism industry in Chicago or just love our city and are proud of it. Chicago placed fourth overall among 80 American cities in this year's best places to visit in the summer by the website Wallet Hub. Yes, we are number four, behind only Las Vegas, Nevada, Los Angeles, and Orlando. Chicago comes in fourth, followed by San Diego, Atlanta, Houston, Dallas, Sacramento, and New York. We did very well. We scored best in terms of activities with restaurants, public beaches, music venues, etc., attraction and travel costs and hassles. So flight costs and number of connections placed in the top 10 of each of those three criteria. Other categories that factored in were local costs, safety, and weather. Safety, we came in number 21, which isn't too bad. Local costs, number 53. Okay. But to be in the top 10 of travel costs and hassles, attractions and activities, not too shabby. So
yeah,
I always
a good place.
It's a great place. I think I sometimes take it for granted because I live here.
Right.
So you don't think, oh, who would come here for vacation? And then you think, if you're smart, you think, well, a lot of people. There's a lot to do here. You've right. got two baseball teams. Mm-hmm. You've got a beautiful lakefront. You've got museums. You've got theater. You've got all sorts of things.
Great restaurants.
Oh, wonderful restaurants. Yeah. Wonderful. We saw, I won't mention the restaurant.
Okay.
But I saw a piece on the news, the 10 o'clock news last night, and they were profiling a restaurant that's been around for 30 years, which is an unbelievable feat.
Yeah.
And yet I was watching some of the food that was being prepared, and I was like, I'm nowhere near that fancy. I don't. I.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
The food is too precious almost for me.
They'd serve it, and you'd say, I can't touch that.
It's too pretty. It's too little. It's too out there. And yes, I'm a little bit narrow-minded. All right, we'll talk to the Irish American Hall of Fame after the news on WGN. There's a wonderful ceremony at the Irish American Heritage Center Saturday night, June 10th, when another class is being inducted into the Irish American Hall of Fame. One of the board members from the Irish American Hall of Fame, Tim Taylor, joins me now. Hi, Tim. How are you?
Brian, I'm doing fantastic, and thank you for having me on your show tonight.
It is a pleasure. For the uninitiated, what is the Irish American Hall of Fame?
The Irish American Hall of Fame, we are now in our seventh year, and this is a way where we honor and tell the story of famous Irish Americans, such as, obviously, John F. Kennedy or Bobby Kennedy, Tip O'Neill. These are some of the past inductees that we have. And this just shares the Irish experience of prominent Irish Americans who've kind of made their way through the American history, and they are members that, you know, must have descendants back to Ireland. And
okay.
So I think to date we've honored more than almost 60 inductees so far.
Wow. Now, that you said they have to have ties going back to Ireland. What are some of the other criteria to be considered as an inductee?
Well, you have to associate with being an Irish American, and so obviously, when you look at folks like Tip O'Neill, you know, he really embraced his Irish heritage. I think, other than that, we're giving these awards in various categories, in sports, arts and humanities, education, and so somehow you have to identify with your Irish heritage.
So there has to be something there. You can't have been ashamed. Now, you've mentioned this is the seventh year. Obviously, no shortage of wonderful Irish Americans, correct?
No, we still have a large perpetual funnel of Irish Americans that still qualify, and so I think we're going to be going strong well into the 2020s.
And how do these people get nominated? How do they come to your attention where you say, you know what, we need to consider putting this person in the Hall of Fame?
It's a good question. You know, the process is a very democratic process, so anyone can nominate someone to be considered for the Irish American Hall of Fame. So,
I'm Irish.
Yeah, right. I may put your name in the hat, Brian. And,
well, that'd be like in 2030 when you've scraped the literal bottom of the pint glass.
And I'm not sure of that. But so anyone can be nominated. And then we have a screening committee of about a dozen prominent individuals who then kind of whittle that list down to a core group. And then we have a voting body, which is made up of over 300 different Irish American academics throughout the U.S. And that could be from the sports world, arts and humanities, public service. And that voting body then really pares down that list to the list that we have this year in this case.
Now, let's get into that, because we'll get into the specific categories. But one of the things that I really like is you also have, besides all the wonderful categories, sports and science and medicine, things like that, you have a hometown hero. So let's start with this year's inductee as the hometown hero.
Right. So the hometown hero is an award. I think this is our fifth year for this particular award. And this is our way to honor someone locally here in the Chicago area. Obviously, it's maybe somebody who hasn't risen to the prominence of a Bobby Kennedy or a JF Kennedy. But certainly does a lot of work worthy of recognition. And so this year we're honoring a family. It's the Flood Brothers, and I'm sure you've heard of the Flood Brothers.
Sure have.
And they they do so much for the community, and they give so much in terms of donations and supporting a lot of Irish organizations, such as the Heritage Center, and but also just to any number of charities. I mean, the list goes on to the folks that they give, and they never seem to turn anybody away. They're just very, very giving in terms of to the community.
So they are the hometown heroes, and we're not, just so people go, oh, are you spoiling it? No, these people already know they're being inducted, so we're not spilling the beans by talking about them here.
Right, this is the Academy Awards. Right. So there should be no mistake in who we announce the winners for this year.
Let's hope.
They're well aware of it, and they're preparing their acceptance speeches right now.
Now, you've got two inductees this year in the arts and humanities category.
Right, that's true. And so there's two very familiar names. And so the first one is, you probably know Raymond Antonio Geraldo Estevez, right?
Yes, of course.
Better known as Martin Sheen. And so Martin is going to be inducted in the Arts and Humanities. And then another very familiar name is Bill Murray will be inducted as well.
That name sounds familiar. I think
he's
got some brothers, right? Doesn't he have some brothers who do some things?
Yeah, he used to be in a little show called Saturday Night Live.
Oh, okay. All right. So Bill Murray. Now, see, Martin Sheen, I know, because I know a little bit about Martin Sheen. I know he's Irish, but you said his real name, and then even Martin Sheen, neither one of those sound like Irish names. So
did
you guys do some background check on this guy?
We did actually do some background checks on him, and he actually checked out. And so, you know, he took his name, the first name, but this is his, Martin Sheen was his stage name, and so he took the first name from a casting director, but Robert Dale Martin, and then he took the his last name from someone who he considers to be a real mentor and a past Irish American Hall of Fame inductee, and this was Archbishop Fulton Sheen.
Oh.
And so that's where he came up with the name Martin Sheen.
Very nice. Let's go into the business and industry category. Who is being inducted this year in there?
So famous hotel mogul John Fitzpatrick, and he's the owner of the Fitzpatrick Hotels. In fact, we used to have one here in Chicago. I think they currently have one in Manhattan. And I may have some still over in Ireland. I'm not sure. I know there's some associated hotels. But he is also the current chairman of the Ireland Funds America. And so he's been recognized not only in the business world, but he's been the recipient of lots of prestigious awards, the Ellis Island Medal of Honor for his contributions in the peace process in Northern Ireland. You know, he was honored by the Queen herself. He's received honorary doctorates in science and economics from Queen's University in Belfast. And he's actually was born in Dublin, but he moved to the U.S. and became a permanent citizen in 2006. He's been in the U.S. since 91, but he became a permanent citizen in 2006.
Oh, that's very cool. Now, here's a name in the public service category that people of a certain age will know. Others will not be as familiar with. But who is the public service inductee?
Audie Murphy.
Audie Murphy. Soldier, actor.
Not only a soldier, the most decorated soldier of World War II, and he served during World War II, and then after his life in the military, he decided to become a singing cowboy, and he recorded a lot of, I guess at the time, famous songs, but then he did a lot of movies to Hell and Back, which was an autobiographical movie, and that was back in 1949. He starred in 39 films.
Wow.
And he unfortunately died in a plane crash in 1971, and he's interred at Arlington National Cemetery, and in his burial site is the second most visited burial site at Arlington, second to the Kennedy family.
Holy cow, I didn't know that. Tim Taylor's my guest. We're talking about the Irish American Hall of Fame. Their 2017 class is being inducted next Saturday, June 10th. The good news is It's happening. The bad news is you can't go because tickets are sold out. All right. This is an unbelievable turnout. Sold out for this. But there's a, if you go to IAHOF.org, you can get all the information about the Hall of Fame. You can learn more about it. You can prepare for next year. And then you can also get a link to the Irish American Heritage Center, which is where, now, I know there's plans for the, inductees to be prominently displayed throughout the center in the future, right?
Right. I mean, the whole purpose of the Hall of Fame is that we want to have an actual brick and mortar section of the Irish American Heritage Center. And currently, you know, the Irish American Heritage Center is 80,000 square feet. That's located at 4626 North Knox in Chicago. And so we're getting to the point now where we have lots of inductees that, that we've already inducted, and now we have to convert that into a brick-and-mortar section of the center, and we hope that that's going to happen in the next couple of years.
Well, the displays and the banners and things that are that go along with the Hall of Fame induction are always gorgeous. And so let's get a couple more of the inductees in, since we've done most of them. In the sports category, who is being inducted?
Maureen Little Mo Connolly. Now, this goes back to the 50s, and Maureen Connolly was the youngest woman to win the Grand Slam, and I think she still holds that record. And she won the U.S. Championships, and I think that was just at about 16 years old. And, again, she was the youngest ever to win America's most prestigious tennis tournament. And then I think during a period of 1953, she entered all four Grand Slam tournaments, the Australian Open, the French Open, Wimbledon, and the U.S. Open. She won all four. And, again, she became the first woman and I think only maybe the second person to win the world's four major tournaments in the same year, commonly known as the Grand Slam. And then she, unfortunately, her career ended very early at age 20. She was involved in a an accident. She was loved to ride horses, and her horse got spooked. Kind of threw her, pinned her against a cement truck, and broke her leg. But after that, she continued to stay involved in tennis and being termed a correspondent. She worked in radio. She wrote for the San Diego newspaper, and she had two children, Cindy and Brenda. And both Cindy and Brenda are actually going to be coming to the Heritage Center to accept the award on behalf of their mother.
Very nice.
Maureen Connolly passed away at a very young age, age 34, of ovarian cancer. And so yeah, she gets her name Little Mo from the battleship, the Big Missouri. It was a World War II ship, that ship was known for pummeling its rivals, and so Little Mo was the smaller version of that because she pummeled her rivals.
Very nice. We only have a couple minutes, Tim. I want to get to the last few inductees in the religion category.
Father Michael Judge. You may remember Father Judge. He was actually the first certified victim of 9/11. He was the New York Fire Department chaplain at the time, and Father Judge was a Franciscan for his whole career. And he's going to be honored at a very special video that's being prepared, and folks like Rudy Giuliani were interviewed for this particular interview. So it's going to be a pretty moving presentation.
How about education?
Lawrence McCaffrey, he wrote a lot of books, and he pretty much the textbook for colleges when they talk about Irish studies or the Irish diaspora. And so Lawrence is 91 years old, and he's going to be present along with his wife at the event.
That's excellent. And finally, in the category of science, it's a twofer.
It's a twofer, twins, double mint twins, Mark and Scott Kelly. They're both from Orange, New Jersey. And, they were the twins where one was up in space, one was down at the, on Earth. And they will also be both inducted under the science category.
Very nice. Well, it is quite a lineup. As you mentioned, no shortage of wonderful Irish Americans to keep the Irish American Hall of Fame going for years and years to come. IAHOF.org is the website, IAHOF.org. You can get all the information. The induction of this year's class happens Saturday night at the Irish American Heritage Center, which is at 4626 North Knox Avenue. However, tickets are sold out for this year. It's I've had the pleasure of being there the last couple years. It is a wonderful event, and I know this year will be similar. Everybody.
But Brian, you know what makes the event really, really great?
I have absolutely no idea.
Is that you are our MC yet again for third year. This is your third year you'll be hosting the Irish American Hall of Fame Gala.
When are you people going to come to your senses? I don't, I am honored. I'm very happy. I've got the tux is at the clear. Well, that's good. I'm excited. Every year the classes get more and more impressive, and every year I'm more and more humbled to be in the company of these people. So it's Saturday night. It should be a lot of fun and continued success, Tim, with the, not only with the Hall of Fame, but with the Heritage Center and all the great work that's going on up there. I will see you Saturday night.
All right, sounds good. Thank you, Brian.
You're welcome, Tim. Take care. That's Tim Taylor. He is on the board of the Irish American Hall of Fame. Their big induction is this Saturday night. IAHOF.org is the website. Maybe you know a wonderful Irish American who you think you could nominate for induction. It sounds like a wonderful process. Cody, again, that name, three N's, two O's, and an A if you're spelling my last name when you nominate me. It would be fantastic. I get to introduce these people. And I meet these people, and I just am in awe of all of them. It's unbelievable. So that is happening Saturday night. And I won't say how nervous I am every year about trying to come up with poignant comments at the beginning. All right, let's do this. Then there's more. It's WGN. I am very excited, again, to be part of that Irish American Heritage Center. I was telling Cody, Bill Murray is going to be there because he's being inducted along with the other wonderful class of 2017. And I have to try to be genial and somewhat funny. You know, okay, it's not about me, so I don't make it about me, but and now all of a sudden, I never worried about being funny before, because last year I think I told you the Cardinal hated me, just stared at me. But now all of a sudden I'm feeling a little pressure with the Murrays in attendance. But I'm sure I'll be fine. And if not, I'll look good. So that's there. Man caught on camera in a park in Los Angeles, bench pressing a goose. I need a new workout routine. Maybe this is the one, because the weights aren't really doing it. You know, my guns get a little bit loaded. You know what I'm talking about. But maybe I do it. I saw you had a Reddit page open. Reddit, this was a big story on Reddit the other day. Photo of a barefooted man laying on a hillside, or do you say lying on a hillside? It's lying on a hillside of a park in Los Angeles. He was bench pressing a goose. So, an actor tweeted this, Scott Lowell is his name, tweeted this picture and writes that the park in question is located in Los Angeles, and the goose, they claim that the goose loved it. I know, the tweet says that you see amazing things at parks of L.A. This guy was bench pressing a goose for 10 minutes. The goose loved it. 2 exclamation points, so you know it must be true. So it is the man and the goose, according to reports, seem to have had some sort of previous knowledge of each other, because they said it was a real goose, and after bench pressing it, the man cradled it, tickled its tummy, and then the goose walked away. I've seen geese wander. They all seem mean to me. I wouldn't trust it to come up. And then, how much can a goose weigh? 20 pounds? 40 pounds?
When they're running after you, trust me. You don't want to know.
I don't yet.
I've been attacked by one.
Where were you attacked by a goose? And how is this the first time hearing of it?
Because it happened a long, long time ago.
I know, but this is the kind of fodder that I'm always looking for.
Took the family up to some out-of-the-way family gathering.
See what I did there, Cody?
I see what Bruce you did
Island?
There.
Got a, oh, man, that was hilarious. That's the kind of stuff I'll break out Saturday night. Which is why this will be my final year.
Good luck. Good luck.
I'm sorry, so you took your family on an outing.
Yeah, it was to some Old West place or one of those cute little places you should take little kids.
Kiddyland?
It wasn't a Kiddyland. No, it was like a Old West place or a farm place or something like that. It was so long ago, I can't even remember.
Okay, well, all right. So
there were geese walking around,
sure.
And a lot of cats running around, all that other stuff, and. Like an idiot.
Are you sure you didn't just go to a kennel somewhere?
I think probably did. Animal shelter.
All right.
So, and outside of a building where I think they had a little restaurant, there was a little dispenser, candy dispenser, where you could dispense free
candy.
Some, not candy, food.
Oh, for the geese?
Yeah, for the animals, whoever,
okay.
Yeah, but, and so like an idiot, I decided to do it when the really smart goose of the group,
Garfield?
Yeah, Garfield came up real close, knowing that that's where you get food. And I went with my hand down, trying to be careful, because I know that, you know, you can lose a finger there. And the
Is that true? Because that doesn't sound like the kind of place you should be taking children if they're in danger of losing their digits.
But you don't have the kids feeding the food.
Oh, okay.
I was like an idiot.
Sure, all right, relax.
And the goose went my hand. I dropped it and started walking away, and the goose kept after me.
Well, why were you taunting the goose?
I wasn't. I was running away. I didn't say, like, hey, goose, come on. Like, what do you got? I ain't saying that.
All right, so you threw the food on the ground.
And I started running away.
It
came after me.
Because it was mad that you didn't have
honking
food.
And, well, probably.
Obviously, it did not catch you.
No.
Well, okay.
Thank goodness.
Boy, for being so long ago.
It was a rough moment for me. I'm reliving it now. I thought I had forgotten
it. You really ruffled Roger's feathers.
Oh, I like what you did. You goose the conversation right
there.
Thank
you. Also, a goose weighs between 7 and 14 pounds, according to Google.com.
Oh, I thought you would go to Goosel.com. That was the worst
Thank
one.
Goodness
that
we're
was
getting...
the worst one ever. I think out of the 10 years or 11 years we've been here, that might have been the worst one ever.
Really? You're trying to quack me up?
Oh, my goodness.
Thank goodness the adult sane people
anymore.
Are coming in after 8 o'clock.
And I said flock, just in case. This is relax.
I caught that.
Everybody said the right words. Let's do this. Then it's news time. And I'm going to see if I still have a license on WGN. Karen Conti's here. She answers your legal questions. I'm only because people are already, we've got, you know, we missed last week. So people are lined up. They have questions to ask.
I'm ready.
Have you had a big week?
I did.
A couple weeks because we were off last week.
I had a great week. I took a little road trip to Memphis and then to New Orleans, which was fun. And I learned a lot, and it was fun. And I'm
learned things.
Back to work.
That's nice to learn things on a vacation.
Well, you know, you stop in the little towns in Jackson, and you stop at Old Miss, and you stop in Vicksburg, and you find out what happened in the Civil War. It's just fun.
Very cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's get to somebody first, a text question. Then we'll get into a couple of big legal stories. Hired a lawyer to do my trust. Never paid yet, but it was July 2016, and we still don't have the trust. Can I go to another lawyer, or am I bound to this one?
That's a strange story.
Yes,
I mean, it shouldn't
year.
Take that long to do it. I mean, one could, you know, succumb in that time period. You know, what I would do is, what you don't want to do is go to another lawyer, pay another lawyer, and then have this lawyer come up with the will and the estate plan, and then you're paying two people or they're going to make a demand. So I would just simply send a letter to the lawyer. It's been a year. You were supposed to do this. You didn't do it. I disengage you, and I'm going to hire someone else to do it.
All right. So then they stop work. They're not going to come at you with a bill later on down the line.
Exactly.
All right. I don't mean to rush you. Are you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready. And you know, when you have a lawyer that's not jumping on things like that, how can you trust a lawyer?
Yeah, for a year?
You can't trust somebody because, you know, doing an estate plan is something that's very important in case you pass. And, you know, with that much time going by, I wouldn't trust that lawyer at all.
And, I mean, obviously, the time for each one is going to vary depending on how much is involved.
Sure.
But a year seems too much,
right? Too much. Now, when it's litigation, that's another story because things take a long time when you're suing people and the court system is slow.
Right.
And so before you get mad at your lawyer and start blaming him or her, you have that lawyer explain what's taking so long.
Okay.
You know, if someone's not calling you back in 6 months, though, that's something to be concerned about.
And to file paperwork or to come up with a will and a trust shouldn't be that long.
All right. Right.
Chris is in Milwaukee. Hi, Chris. Welcome to WGN.
Hi. What? I have a question for Karen.
Yes. Hi, Chris.
And there's a backstory. I was sued by a credit company, and I'm on Social Security, and I couldn't pay the amount. And I talked to a bankruptcy lawyer, and you know, he said if there were any threats from the company to ignore them. But I am interested in getting temporary work, and I don't want my wages to be garnished. And how does this company find out that I'm working?
Well, you know, there are ways to do that. Some companies will hire private investigative firms that will find out through your social security number, perhaps, where you might be working. And in that regard, they can then send the garnishment to your employer. They can't take all your wages. They can only take a certain percentage, but they can certainly do that. Now, and I don't know how much is involved and how much they're going to pursue it. How much is involved that you owe them?
Over 5,000.
Okay. So, you know, I don't know if they're going to pursue it that hard. Have they gotten a judgment against you? I take it they've taken you to court and sued you already?
Yes.
Okay.
And but my lawyer said just to ignore them, and so I have been. And, but, you know, if I would get a second checking account at another bank, would they still find out?
They probably can't find out where your bank account is, but they can do what we call a citation to discover assets, which is a notice that they send you, and then you are obligated to come into a lawyer's office with all of your bank accounts and all of your records showing where your money is and where you're working, and you're under oath to disclose those truthfully. So there's a mechanism for them to get to those bank accounts and to get to where you're employed.
So it
just depends on how aggressive they're going to be in getting and collecting that judgment.
Yeah, you know, I get food stamps and, you know, my money is tight, but I'm doing okay. But it's just that I would like to get a little extra money from a temporary job, you know, for the water bill and things like that.
No, I understand. And going bankrupt, I take it, is not worth it, according to your lawyer.
That's right.
Yep. Yeah. Okay. Well, good luck to you.
Good luck, Chris. Hope it works out for you. That's always tough. So I didn't realize if you're going through this stuff with a bankruptcy attorney and you get, you know, a part-time job, the companies that you owe can find out that you're working?
Yeah, they can. Like I said, it used to be that companies could do it very easily. They could get a private investigating firm and they would run the social and you would get all the bank information. Now, with credit theft and all that, it's a lot harder to do so, but they still can summon the person in, like I said, to ask them, where are your assets? Do you have a car? Do you have a home? Where are your bank accounts? And you have to answer truthfully. And,
right.
And then from there, they can do the, you know, they can garnish wages. They can put a lien on your house, they can levy, meaning they can take your car away. Those are the options that they have.
All right. Justin is on the road, so we'll get to him since he's tooling about. Hello, Justin.
Hi, how are you doing?
We're well, thanks. What's your question for Karen?
Oh, Karen, I got a little interesting situation. My fiance and I are looking to help out friends of our family with having a child, so we're going to do a surrogacy. And we just want to make sure that we do right by the child and make sure that they got the parental rights for the parents correct, because the egg will be coming from my fiance and the father will be from her husband or the other family.
Okay. Well, this is something that is very much regulated by strict laws and by contract. And there is a lawyer who I know who does only this kind of thing. And you have to, I would highly recommend, I don't say you have to, but you would really be well advised to get a contract in place so that everybody knows what their rights are. They're standard contracts, so it's not like we're reinventing the wheel. But if you call me, I can give you the name of the person. That's all she does is reproductive rights.
There's that many? Wow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, there's all different forms of this, too. You know, there's surrogates, there's test tube, there's, you know, in vitro, there's, you know, sperm donors, you know, and she does work for the hospitals that do this and the doctors, and she does this work for individuals. And it's something that I could never explain or help you with because it is very regulated and it changes. And when the law changes, because this is all cutting edge stuff, this is something we didn't do as much, you know, 30 years ago, the law is now changing with it. So you're best to get a person who's just on top of all of this and have it all papered and explained to you so that there's no misunderstandings down the line.
All right. What's that number?
All right.
Yeah. Why don't you email me, Justin? That would really be helpful because then I can just turn around and send you that information back. It's K Conti, K-C-O-N-T-I, at kconti.com.
All right.
All right. Thank you.
Well, good luck. It sounds interesting.
Justin. Yeah, it sure does. And when you said, I have a friend who's an attorney and that's all she does, how can there be that many cases like Justin's call? But you're right, there's all the different levels of parental rights and wow, that's
yeah.
That it, the law is constantly changing. All right, one more before we take a break. Lynn is in Chicago. Hi, Lynn.
Hi. This is kind of a weird situation, but my mom is in the beginning process of doing some estate planning, and we're kind of estranged from my sister and her family, and she has kind of told her lawyer that she would just like to leave everything to me and let me decide somewhere down the line after she passes away what to do with everything. I don't know if some of it is just she doesn't want to deal with it or if this is truly how she feels, but her attorney's kind of pressuring her to leave the other family member something. I don't care either way, but I feel bad. I don't know what to do to help my mom through this stage and this process because she's pretty much alone through it other than myself helping her.
The problem, Lynn, is you're in a kind of a bad situation because if you get involved, you could be accused potentially, and I've seen this over and over again, of undue influence, meaning let's just say that you take your mom to the appointment or your mom starts talking to you. You talk to the lawyer you convince your mother to do the following. Your sister could easily walk into court and say, your mother's elderly, you know, she was on the line about whether to do this, and look, good old Lynn just unduly influenced her, and then the whole thing gets turned over in court, and there's a case that goes for years. So you have to stay out of it,
correct?
Which I'm telling you, probably then you really can't do anything.
Which for me, I'm okay staying out of it because I kind of see the big picture in what you're saying. But I don't know if my mom is, this is the problem. I don't know what, she's just like, I don't want to deal with this.
You know, I think.
So she's trying to drag me back into it.
Yeah. Well, I think, I don't understand, maybe you can ask her, what does the lawyer see as the problem with leaving it all? I mean, see, even saying this, you could be accused of trying to force the issue, but I'm wondering what the lawyer's reasoning is. Is it to say, I want to leave her $5, and then, because then the court could possibly see, well, she obviously knew she had another daughter, she specifically gave her $5, so that means she understood she had a daughter, she specifically did that because of legitimate
reasons.
That's what
I'm thinking, too, is that he's in a roundabout way doing it to protect,
right?
You know, what's there. I mean, we've more or less been estranged from her for the past 15 to 20 years.
Right.
So,
and hopefully it won't be an issue, but you can never count on it. Because when you have people who are estranged and parents die, all the feelings come out and all the jealousies and envy, and then they're going to accuse you of doing something wrong. So, Lynn, I say stay out of it, and hopefully the lawyer will talk to your mom and convince her to do what is correct and right in her good conscience.
Okay, perfect. Well,
good
thank
luck.
You so much.
Good luck,
I appreciate
Lynn.
It. Thanks.
Yeah, we've talked about this before. Once you get into family matters like that, things can turn really ugly really fast.
People come out of the woodwork in ways that you can never imagine.
And it's hard for somebody in Lynn's position who thinks she just wants to help her mom out, but you're right, boy, that could turn into, hey, why did she
absolutely
did this
even
to make the lawyer do this?
Taking an elderly person to the lawyer's office and sitting in the waiting room, you know, while the person goes in there can be a fact that goes to undue influence.
So how do you...
You have to stay out of it. If your mom says, can you help me find a lawyer, you know, you probably be best to say you're going to have to do that on your own or find somebody else who's not a potential heir to help that person find the lawyer and get there and get it done.
Good luck. All right, let's take a quick break. People are still on the line, and we're getting texts, 312-981-7200 if you want to get a question answered by Karen. But if people miss out now, how do they get a hold of you during the week?
Call me, 312-332-7800 or kconti@kcontilaw.com.
All right, more with Karen on the other side. It's WGN. If you're smart like James, you can get through to her right now. James is in Oak Lawn. Hi, James.
Hello, Nick. I love your show. And Karen, I've always enjoyed your advice. And unfortunately, this time I actually need some.
Okay.
It's kind of a complicated situation. And you can bear with me. I'm going to try to explain this the best I can. I work as an independent contractor, mostly for myself, just doing, minor electrical and HVAC jobs in the Chicagoland area. I have for years. A lot of these jobs I do are retained from Craigslist and sources like that, where they're non-contract jobs with customers. things of that nature, referrals, that type of work.
Okay.
It has come to my attention that there are a group of people, a handful of customers, and just to give you a scope of it, if there's 300 work days in a year for me, I guess about 300 different customers. So there's four or five people that over the past 4 years that have actively launched a smear campaign against me through social media, neighborhood groups, and neighborhood newspapers. It just all came to my attention because someone who I was formerly involved with in a relationship has just filed a restraining, or what do you call it, an order of protection against me, which is completely baseless. I don't even understand how that was able to be obtained, but apparently it was. And she intended to take me to small claims court for something else, but she is the one spearheading this latest, greatest push with this new, this online and social media type smear campaign against me. And it's very hurtful to me. I mean, I know it's like slanderous, libelous. I've been looking up all these terms, but then, of course, I heard your voice and thought, well, why should I let somebody who actually knows what they're talking about give me? And this
That's
is convoluted,
good.
But yeah, Nick, honestly, yes, it truly is always good. It just takes about 50 years of living to learn that.
Yeah. Well,
and it's Brian. Nick is on during the week.
Oh, I'm sorry, Brian.
That's
Brian,
okay.
I'm so sorry.
That's all right. That's okay.
That's how upset I truly am. I can't even get a name right.
Well, you know, James, this is really a hard thing to do because, you know, as they say, a lie is halfway around the world before the boot hits yes. the floor, or whatever the phrase is. So, and people believe what they read on the internet, and it's very easy to lodge false and slanderous things. It's very, very easy. And before you know it, your name gets Googled, and the first thing that comes up is, you know, all the bad stuff. So, and it's really hard to undo it now. You might need to talk to a computer expert on that regard to see if you can get that stuff moved down so that when your name gets Googled, at least it's on the third or fourth page. I don't know much about that. As to your ex-girlfriend, you know, the thing that I do in these kind of cases is if you hire me, I would send a letter to her detailing that these things are false and they're misleading and that you're losing business and that in the law of Illinois provides that if it's a false statement of fact and it's if you lose business as a result, that it's actionable. Filing a lawsuit is very expensive, and what are you going to do, get a judgment against her for $500,000? I doubt she has that much money to pay a judgment, so you would probably spend too much money to pursue that. But a strong letter in that regard, you know, is something that you probably should do, but if she persists in doing it, you know, your recourse is limited
yeah.
because you have to pay
right.
all that money for a lawsuit.
Right, I agree. Does the, you know, to what end does the, I see what you're saying. Here's my question, though. If this person just went to the Rolling Meadows Courthouse and obtained an order of protection against me, how can they actively be doing these things behind my back, which are completely easily provable?
Well, the first thing
she's actually contacting friends of mine I've known for 30, 40 years and trying to be a smear, what do you call it, a monger, like a false.
Yeah, I mean, there's some people
that can't
let go. Okay, so order of protection.
Right, right.
She can go and get an order of protection. It's called ex parte, which means by herself. But in 10 days, the court will serve you with that. The sheriff will go out and serve you with it, and you have the opportunity to go in and fight it. Okay, did you do that?
I've not been served anything from anybody, nothing. And this happened like 4 or 5 days ago. And I did look online and verified that there is a small claims, a civil thing that's supposed to happen on July 7th. But I've not been served any papers. No one's given me no information. I just went online and found this out myself.
Well, they can't do any. The order protection can happen without you being present because that's the
correct.
Nature of an emergency. And if she convinced the judge that it was an emergency, that she was worried for her safety, the judge is going to enter that. But in 10 days, you have a right to go in. You will be served with it if she's going to pursue it, and I assume she's going to. And then you're going to go in there. And if I were you, I would get a lawyer because you want to get that wiped out. Okay.
What about James said the small claims matter?
Yeah, it looks like she sued him too.
But you have to be notified about that
of
as well,
course.
Correct?
You have to be served personally with
right.
that. That's due process. So she can't just mail it to you. You can't just find out about it online. You have to actually be served by a sheriff before the process right. starts.
So
sometime between now and the 7th, Brian, I might be expecting someone to walk up and say, hey, hello.
Yes.
Take these papers.
Yes.
If it's a sheriff, obviously I would accept them. But if it's somebody else, do I have to?
It could be a problem. Yeah, I would just accept it.
Because honestly, I don't mind, and I'll gladly go to court, whatever it is, or let's hash it out if you know, if it's something that's real and legit. And
yeah, sure. You want your opportunity to be heard in court. You don't want her to go to court and say, oh, we served him, and then later you find out there's a judgment entered against you. You want to get it cleared up, and if you need a lawyer, you know, let me know. I can see if there's, you know, if I handle that or someone else can go out and help you with that.
And what's the best way for James or anybody to get a hold of you?
Best way is the email, kconti, K-C-O-N-T-I, at kcontilaw.com or 312-332-7800.
Well, James, good luck. I hope it works out for you. That's... Boy, the internet can be a horrible thing if somebody wants to start spreading all sorts of rumors.
It's amazing what bitter people can do to hurt businesses and to hurt other human beings.
But just to go back and clarify, if someone does that, if someone files an order of protection against you, you will find out because you have to be served. Is it within 10 days?
It's about a 10-day thing, yeah.
Okay.
So, you know, again, the courts err on the side of protecting somebody.
Sure.
So they're going to enter that unless the person doesn't really prove anything. But if you know, someone goes there and says, I'm really afraid, he's going to throw a bomb in my face, whatever, the judge is going to enter it. But those sheriffs will serve you. That's a very high priority,
yeah,
to serve people with those because, number one, you want to know if you can't go near someone.
Sure.
Because usually it says you can't come within 100 feet or whatever it is. Right. And you're going to want to have notice of when that hearing is.
Right.
And you're going to want to be able to get a lawyer to fight it.
Okay.
Because it's a little trial.
And is there... What type of attorney specializes in that kind of thing, or do just...
You can get a criminal defense lawyer or a family law lawyer.
Okay.
I do orders of protection. I help clients get them, and I defend against them.
All right. Karen is here. We will answer more of your legal questions on the other side of the news, but first you have to give them to us at 312-981-7200. We'll also talk... Bill Cosby is... the trial is coming, so we'll talk a little bit about that and changes if you are paying a child support in Illinois. A lot to get to in the final half hour with Karen here on WGN. Let's talk to, is it Mayim? Majum?
Yes, sir.
Yes, hi, welcome. What's your question for Karen?
Well, I'm a truck driver, and a couple of years ago I fell down pretty bad. I broke my ankle. I had a head trauma, and the doctor, a year later, without even consulting, gave me... He said, well, your legs are good enough to go for light duty, back to work. Even though I still had, unfortunately, health issues, and I, without consulting me, I went back to work because I had to, because I didn't have a lawyer at that time because I was very weak and my body was very tired and I wasn't at myself. It was very sad. And, It's haunting because I start working light duty. I couldn't even do anything, hardly. Almost collapsed a couple of times, and I finally, after I got a little bit healthier, they fired me. And well, now everything is fine. I'm back to work. But it was unfortunate circumstances where the doctor did not consult me, and he just simply forgot, and he put me in a dangerous situation at work where they were very angry and resentful. And they would insult me all the time, and I couldn't defend myself because I was not 100% healthy.
Well, you know, Majem, I don't think there's anything you can do now, but this is, you know, for other people, just a lot of times when people are injured at the job, they are afraid to hire a lawyer because they're afraid their employer is going to get mad. And frankly, you know, if you don't have a very serious injury, you may opt not to have a lawyer and just resolve it yourself. But if you have a serious injury or two injuries like you had, it probably would have been a great idea to get a lawyer, because what happens is the insurance lawyers for the workers' comp insurance will say, go back to work, you're perfectly fine, even though you're not. And these doctors, I don't know how they maintain their licenses sometimes,
really?
Because they will send people back to full-time duty when they can't even walk. So, you know, when the doctor tells you to go back to work, you know, you go back to work because that's what you do. You're a worker.
Right.
But the problem is that they don't have your best interest in mind, and I have seen many people get injured again and have their injuries exacerbated. So you need a lawyer who's going to stand there and say, don't go, you're not going back to work. We're going to get a second opinion. You're going to go on desk duty until we get this resolved, and then you're entitled to some money as an ongoing basis to support yourself, and then at the end, you're entitled to a lump sum payment for your disability. So you need a lawyer when you have a serious injury
but
at work.
But for Majma, it's too late, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
Yeah.
Thank
so, you
for
know,
the
and
call.
I don't do that kind of work, but I know some good people that, that do only that kind of work, and they're excellent at what they do.
Let's before we keep we've got one more. We'll get to Teresa and then we'll. Hi, Teresa.
Hi, how are you, Brian?
We're well, thanks. What's your question for Karen?
Okay, first I have to say I've been listening to her for years, and I just think she's the best.
Oh,
she's the
you.
Best.
Thank
no
you.
Argument there, Teresa.
Basically, I'll just try to make it as short as I can. There was a death in the family, and inheritance was left to siblings, and one of the siblings was anointed, so to speak, the executor. And I feel there's been some wrongdoing there, and I wondered, how do I go about it? It was in another state. So do I have to get a lawyer in that state, or I've asked the person directly to be more forthcoming. They're supposed to do whatever the executor is. They're supposed to let you know where the money is going, how it's going to be distributed, et cetera. And none of these things have been done. What do you suggest I do?
Yeah, this is a real common problem, Teresa. I see this all the time. And this is word to the wise. When you set an executor in your estate plan, make sure that person is trustworthy. And, you know, you may even consider getting somebody who's not inheriting money, who may not, you know, who doesn't have an incentive to do something wrong. In your case, you're probably
right.
going to have to, if you want to pursue this and you can't, you can't make the executor do what you want him or her to do, you would probably hire a lawyer in the county where the will, where the person died, and you'd find somebody who does estate planning law, and you would have that person maybe file some things or make demands on the executor to understand what's going on, where's the money, what's the process, what are you doing, and if I mean, hopefully that would be enough to get him in line. I say him, it could be her. Then the lawyer might have to bring some paperwork and file in court if it's worth it to do it, if it's monetarily worth it. But I see this all the time, and it's unfortunate, but it's expensive.
It's just a terrible, terrible thing. It really is.
I imagine.
Mean, is there like a something basic that you could ask a lawyer to do that wouldn't cost, you know, a ton of money?
Just make demands on where's the money, what's in the process. Yes, a letter is probably a good thing. And you know,
it should be from the county. I have to get someone from that county.
Well, it makes sense to do that first of all because you have to know what the court system is, like what's going on in the court. And if it has to go to court, you want someone who's right there near the courthouse to be able to do it and who practices in that area. So it makes a lot of sense to hire someone who's a local. And I'm telling you, you know, executors have a fiduciary duty, which means they have to treat the decedents, the person who died, their estate, you know, as better than they treat their own. So they have a very high obligation, but I see executors all the time who just don't do their job, and they do what's best for them and not for the rest of the siblings.
I didn't realize that someone could legally do that. Wouldn't be afraid to do that.
Yeah, well... And there's you know, if it's probate, and I guess there's all kinds of whistles and bells here, but if it goes to court, the judge will also look over what the executor's doing. But in most estate plans that are good these days, it doesn't go through probate. So therefore, no one's looking at it, and therefore he can kind of do what he wants to do without any interference.
Right.
So
there was no probate in this particular case.
Yeah.
Do you think, I mean, just probably you may not be able to answer that, just the ballpark figure, what would be reasonable to payment for a letter?
I mean, I think a lawyer probably would charge you like an hour, 2 hours time that you would pay as a retainer just so in case he has to follow up or if he has to do something. But, you know, I don't know if $500 or something like that would be the ballpark.
That seems fair.
Yeah.
Well, good luck,
Teresa. I hope it works out.
Thank you so much.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Let's take a minute and talk about the Bill Cosby case.
Okay.
And we'll get back to more of your calls, 312-981-7200. So, he's been accused by over 50 women. He's going on trial for three counts of, aggravated indecent assault, but it's only against one person, a woman from Temple University, who made the allegations a long time ago. He settled. At that point, the district attorney, if I understand the case correctly, decided not to press charges.
Right.
He settled with her in a civil suit. How then, years later, because, again, from all my court TV watching and my L.A. law and all that, I thought you couldn't be tried twice for this. Oh, well, he wasn't tried.
He was never tried criminally.
He was never tried criminally. So you can come back, you can circle back around?
Yes. This is the same thing with O.J., remember. He gets goes to the criminal trial. He gets acquitted.
Right.
The family brings a civil lawsuit against him.
And that's where he's
found. And they find him guilty. So then the issue is when you go on a criminal trial is beyond a reasonable doubt, which is a really high standard.
Yes.
But a civil lawsuit, it's more probably true than not true.
So if
so
that's
it's a
the
lesser
case,
burden.
Why is there more... I guess the burden of proof now is they have more evidence now than they did when they decided not to file before. Is it because all these other women have come forward and so that's influencing
yes.
the judge's decision?
Yes, I think there was a changing of the guards in the prosecution's office, and the prosecutor there many years ago said, you know what, if you get some money from Bill Cosby, you can call that a win. You can take it and basically walk away knowing that he had to pay for his actions with you.
Okay.
The new prosecutor, probably hearing about 50 women, says. Statute of limitations is still open. We've got good evidence. The witness is trustworthy, maybe in his opinion. And so we're going to bring the charges. So different prosecutors have different, standards on what they're going to bring.
Okay.
This is a hard case, though.
It is, and it's one of those. Now, the reports came out that Bill Cosby will not testify. And, I've said before, I always find that a little fishy, and I understand there's a lot of reasons not to testify. But in my non-legal mind, it's like, well, if you're innocent, you should go up there and say something. But the problem is, he was deposed in this civil case. His deposition will be admissible in this trial,
yes.
correct?
And remember, he's not saying that there was no sexual contact.
Right.
He's saying it was consensual. I
yes.
did it, but it's consensual. He also admitted that he gave her pills,
yes.
Quaaludes or Valium or whatever it was. And so, therefore, the only question is, was this consensual? And, again, so many years has gone by,
mm-hmm.
16 years has gone by. She took a year to even report it to the police after it happened. Apparently, she had gone to his house before. He got a little friendly. She said she didn't like it, but she ended up going back. So these
right.
are all facts that aren't going to do well for her. Also, having brought a civil suit, is the jury going to say, really? You try to get some money from him, and now what do you want? So all those things are going to be used against her. But I think there's a strong possibility that these jurors know about the other women.
Is that admissible?
Not going to be admissible. The judge said that there's only one woman who had the same thing happen to her, almost exactly the same thing happened to her, and that's the only woman who's going to be able to testify
okay.
to prove that Cosby had an MO to do this thing. They're not going to hear about the 50 other women. Now, will they have heard about that in the media? Hard to believe that at least some
sure.
of them hadn't heard that. But it's not going to be part of the suit. So, part of the prosecution. The other thing is she's a lesbian. So she's going to say, why in the world would I consent to sex with?
Yeah.
I don't even like men,
right.
To have sex with men. So there's all facts going different ways, and it's going to be very interesting. I do think it's hard after all these years to prove beyond a reasonable doubt.
All those years aside, how hard is just a basic he said, she said anyway?
Rape is almost always that way.
Yeah.
And the thing that's better about this case, in favor of the prosecution, is that you have Bill Cosby saying he did it, and you have Bill Cosby saying he gave her drugs. The only thing that is missing is, did she consent?
Right.
And she's going to say, no, I didn't, and he's not going to be on the stand saying, yes, she did.
Now, obviously, you're not Bill Cosby's attorney. You're not connected to this case, so this is all hypothetical. In this case, why wouldn't you put him on the stand?
Or
a client like him. Let's say, client like him.
Sometimes, Brian, what you do is you just make the state prove beyond a reasonable doubt. If you let the jury know the law, which is defendant doesn't have to do anything. Defendant can sit there and do absolutely nothing. They have to prove beyond a reasonable doubt. They haven't done it. They can't do it. After all these years, it's not beyond a reasonable doubt.
Okay.
That's going to be the argument. If you put him on the stand, I'm sure he's still with it, but he's an older man.
Right.
He may not have good memories about this. He has a deposition that is going to be read into the record, which he might contradict, and then it could look like he's lying. and he may get confused. So I probably would think that the defense lawyer is making a good decision in saying, we're just going to invoke the Fifth Amendment.
There we go. Karen Conti is here, 312-981-7200. We have a few minutes left with Karen. If people miss out, how can they get a hold of you during the week?
Call me at 312-332-7800 or kconti at kcontilaw.com.
We'll get some more of your calls on the other side. It's WGN. Jerry is at Display. It's hi, Jerry.
Hi.
No, he's not. He's right there.
Hi, Jerry.
Hi, Jerry.
Hi. Hi, everybody. What I'm calling about is, so I own a factory, and I had someone put an asphalt parking lot in my driveway, and I even took the concrete out by the sidewalk so you could pitch it lower away from the building so the water would run away from the building. And after you got through, the water ended up pitching into the building, into the door. I said, well, who installs a driveway and has the water run up to the building? They always do it. And the guy argued with me. He wouldn't do nothing. So I had to hire someone else to tear it up and redo it. He put a lien on the building.
Mm.
How long is that lien good for? And what right have I got to stop the lien?
Yeah. So it's called a mechanic's lien, even though it's not a mechanic who did this. And there's really strict rules about what they have to do to enforce it. They put it on the property, then they have a certain amount of time to assert their lien in court. So what I would suggest, John, I don't know all the numbers and the days and the rules about it. I don't have that off the top of my head because I don't do this kind of work. Why don't you email me, and I'll there's one website that'll explain it all really well to you, and then I'll give you the name of somebody who just does this. That's what they do for a living, is mechanics liens. They litigate them, they push the issue, and they get these liens removed, you know, if it's appropriate. So why don't you send me an email, and I'll get you that information.
What's that email address?
It's kconti, K-C-O-N-T-I, at kcontilaw.com.
All right.
And just so you know, this happens in people's homes, too. It's not just businesses. So
I know you've used that term a couple times before.
You hire a painter, you hire a contractor, and you don't pay them. They put a lien on your house, and but they can't just do it willy-nilly. They have to do certain things afterwards in order to perfect it. So if you don't know that, it kind of concerns you because you think it's going to be there forever.
Right.
But you need to know the law, and you need to talk to a lawyer about how to take care of it.
All right, Jared. Kconti at kcontilaw.com. John is in Park Ridge. Hello, John.
Hi, how are you?
We're well. Thanks. What's your question?
Okay. I have a felony conviction in the state of Illinois, and I understand I've lost my Second Amendment rights. Now, the conviction itself is for a nonviolent thing, and it certainly didn't involve firearms. Is there such a thing as petitioning the governor for restoration of my firearms rights? Will I ever be entitled to bear arms legally?
Yeah, you know what? I don't know the definitive answer to that, but my guess, my educated guess, having dealt with these types of issues before, is the answer is no. But you might want to look into an expungement. I don't know if you've looked into that, and I'm not saying that you have a right to it, but it's definitely worth talking to a lawyer to see if it's possible to get your record expunged because it was a nonviolent felony. And if you email me, I can give you a name of some people who do that. But I don't know administratively if there's an avenue for you to say, you know, give me my gun rights even though I have a felony because it wasn't violent, didn't involve handguns. You would think there would be, but I've never heard of that.
Huh, okay.
You know, I clearly remember, even though that was some time ago, when I was that judge, when I took conviction. No, I didn't. Basically, the biggest thing that it is, I just lost my right to bear arms.
Yeah. It's very significant. Very significant to lose that right. And, you know, but let's see what we can do for you, okay?
Yep. And what's that email address
again?
It's
kconti at kcontilaw.com.
All right. Good luck, John. We only have a few minutes left, but if you are a divorced parent in Illinois, things are changing drastically July 1st concerning child support.
That's correct.
Do we call it child support anymore?
We call it child support.
Oh, we change alimony. We don't call it
alimony. Yeah, we call that maintenance. Yes,
okay.
Right. And we don't call visitation. We call it parenting time.
That's okay. There's, I
semantics,
can't keep up.
Semantics.
Yes, all the legal terminology.
But child support is going to change. And it's not, you know, going forward, instead of just saying if you're the non-custodial parent, meaning you're the one who's visiting the child, it's usually, you know, you pay a percentage. You know, it's 28% of your income, you know, for two children, 32% for three children. So instead of that, what we're going to do now is income sharing. So you'll look at the both parties' incomes, you'll add them up, and then you'll figure out how much the child needs to be raised, and then you do sort of a percentage of who pays child support. And again, I'm making that really simple. There's all kinds of...
I was going to say, that sounds too easy to actually be correct.
It's a very complicated system, but it's a more fair system. The problem is we don't know exactly how it's going to work because the legislature has not really come out with the worksheets that are giving us the calculations on how to do it. But suffice to say that it's going to now... So, for instance, if you are the non-custodial parent and you're making $50,000, but your wife, who's got custody of the kids, is making $600,000, that's going to be factored in, and you're going to be paying less in the long run because she makes enough money to support the children, and so they're going to be looking at those percentages.
Okay.
The judges will also look at how many nights the children spend with each parent, and if it's over a certain number of days, then that's a big factor that's going to be taken into account. So this is really going to be complicated. It's going to change things drastically going forward. People keep asking me, can I go back and have this
calculated? Somebody just texted, is this retroactive or just for divorces moving forward?
It's just for divorces moving forward, but if you have a change in circumstances, okay, let's say you're divorced 2 years ago, and next year you have a situation where the husband is making, say, an extra $100,000 a year, and you have a reduction in your income, and you want to go back to court to have that reassessed, the new law, my understanding is the new law will be used going forward. So you can't just go to court to say, I want to try this new law and see how it works. You're going to have a change in circumstances, and then the new law will apply.
It seems like a more fair system.
Yes.
I can't see the drawback except for, child support was never based on, that was never really part of a settlement, right? So a vindictive ex couldn't demand more child support from the ex. Could that be, how sometimes divorces get contentious and they're battling over the dog or the furniture or this or that. Is child support negligible like that?
Yeah, not
negotiable,
really.
Rather?
It's not really. And a lot of judges won't even approve of a settlement unless the support is statutory child support.
Okay.
So if let's say the mother has custody of the kids and there's three kids and it's 32%, and then she says, you know what, in exchange for something else, I'll just take 15%. The judge may not approve that.
Okay.
The judge can say, I don't care, you agree to it. I want the statutory child support. It's mandatory. So now we have more to negotiate about. We have more numbers to fill out. We have more arguments to make. It's going to be more fair, but it's going to cause a lot of confusion in negotiating these things.
Because if you're the custodial parent and you make more than the non-custodial parent, chances are you're going to end up footing more of the bill.
Yes, and that's just the court looks at it. Who's got the money is going to pay the expenses.
Yeah, I don't see what would be wrong with that.
No, it does make sense, and the majority.
That's why I'm wondering if it'll work. It makes too much sense. Doesn't
right.
it work?
Well, and most states have that. We're behind in that.
Okay.
And so this is it's not like it's going to be impossible to implement because other states are doing it. It's just going to take a little bit of time, and it's going to be a little hard at first because the lawyers just aren't the judges don't really know how to do it yet. So
what are they waiting for? And is the July 1st? Is that a firm deadline?
Yes. July 1st is a firm deadline. We're waiting for what we call the worksheets. We know how this is going to work, sort of, but we need to know how to figure out how much the child needs to live on.
Okay.
We don't have the worksheets that show that. So there'll be like health insurance. You'll add in a cost of extracurricular activities. You'll add in overhead in the house, like how much is the mortgage. So all of those things, we don't know exactly how they're going to be factored in yet. And once we get those worksheets, which should be any day now, then we'll be able to start calculating how these things should go down.
All right. Well, Karen, it is always a pleasure. We're
always
glad you're back from the road trip. Are you going to be here next week?
I am going to not be here.
You are not going to be here next week.
I'm not going to be here next week.
Okay. Well, then listen. Don't get in trouble this week.
No, please don't.
Wait till the following week and then get in trouble because then Karen will be back. See, because again, if you're not here and they're in trouble and they ask me, much deeper trouble.
My mother said, mind your P's and Q's, whatever those are.
Yeah. I don't know what they are, but I've heard that saying too, and I don't know if
P's
I even have them.
And mind your P's and Q's.
Well, it's been a pleasure. How can people get a hold of you during the week?
Call me at 312-332-7800, or better yet, email me with all your details, kconti@kcontilaw.com.
Steve Cochran Show Wednesday
at 6:30. Wednesday morning at 6:30, 6:40.
6:30, 6:40. All right, we'll talk to you soon. Do this, and we'll say goodbye. It's WGN. Thank you for listening, and thank you for being part of the program. We'll talk to you again next week at this same bat time, same bat channel. Rick Kogan comes your way on the other side of the news. It is 9 o'clock. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. If you're an Amazon Echo user, just say play WGN Radio and marvel at modern technology. The news is sponsored by, well, nobody, but it's 9 o'clock, and that means It's time for Roger Badish.